Hello there, and welcome to The Spread, Nesson Football Picks Podcast. I'm Nesson.com's Mike Cole, joined as always by Ricky Doyle. Ricky, how are you on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon?
I'm doing pretty good, other than this weird issue I got going on with my phone right now.
What's up?
It says, setup wizard, SIM card is not from Verizon Wireless.
Uh-oh.
I have a Verizon phone, though, so I don't know what's going on.
But sounds like a
fortunately,
problem.
Fortunately, I don't think too many people are trying to get in touch with me anyways, because they know I'm recording The Spread.
Especially right at this hour, yeah. So, we're here, like I said, this is our Football Picks Podcast, so we'll make football picks at some point. As always, we'll do our 3, 2, and 1 unit plays, kind of touch on a handful of games across the league for week 14 in the NFL. I told you earlier, week 13 did not go well for me. I hit one of my picks on the show. I went 6-9 overall with our full slate of picks at nessandbets.com. My contests are not doing well. My betting did not do well. I've reached the point of the season where I've convinced myself everything is going to go the wrong way, and I am not seeing the board with any clarity whatsoever. I am in my own head, no confidence whatsoever. So luckily, I dined out on a pretty good start to the season where I felt like I was doing better than I actually probably was, and giving myself too much credit for basically just winning more coin flips than I lost. But I don't know about you, but I have reached the point. I mean, you went 9-6 last week, so that's pretty good. But it's just at the point where I don't feel good after last week. I just did not. Things didn't break my way, and I just had bad reads on some stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it gets more difficult as the season goes along to identify those games that you really like too. I mean, games are sharper than they were back in week 1, 2.
Yeah, that's
three,
true.
Four.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like nothing jumps out quite like it did earlier in the season. And just the overall, I think, volatility, I guess you could say, of a lot of teams.
You got more injuries. You're starting to question commitment.
It's just, there's just so
motivation.
Many teams where you're not entirely sure what you're going to get week to week. And so even when you think you have a good read on a game, that could completely change 15 minutes into it.
So the other thing, too, we are into the Christmas season. And
got my tree up the other day.
So yeah, we did too. We haven't
about that.
This podcast might as well just be Mike talks about having a kid. We have lights on the tree. We got a tree, put it up. It was crooked. I fixed it. Put lights on it. We have yet to put the ornaments on it. You go. I don't really care. Do you go real or fake?
I go fake.
It's such a better move,
but
especially
if you get
gifted or handed down one.
That's kind of my thing.
Because I don't want to spend.
My mom had an extra tree.
They're
she got
super
a new
expensive.
Tree, gave me a roll of tree. So it's like, all right.
They're really expensive. But at the same time, real ones are expensive too. It costs us like $80 for like a 6-foot tree.
Yeah. See, growing up, I always had a real tree. So
I had a fake one growing up, but my wife had real ones. So now I get real ones.
Well here's another question for you. A colored lights or white lights guy?
Depends where we are. So on the tree,
yeah,
colored. What about you?
So I have one of those trees that have like the lights basically built into it.
That is,
so I have to go white.
That is a that's
but
a move.
My preference is color. So basically,
colored
I'm
on the trees
for what everything I don't want in my tree this year.
Yeah, for me it's a big play up by ear. I'm from like a relatively redneck part of the state. I have relatively trashy upbringings, so I think. I think colored lights get a bad rap from that in that regard. I think
they do.
The white lights are definitely classier. And so as I've tried to class myself up over the years, I've found myself putting more white lights either around the house or outside. I think the white usually plays better outside.
It is. I mean, yeah, it's all about setting. Like if I
correct.
If I walk
I'm a room
into
by room
a,
guy.
A hotel lobby or something, I'm expecting white
fair
lights.
Point.
And, just one color tinsel or whatever, but me personally, I'm thinking the color lights are a little more festive, so I like to spruce it up, get some different color ornaments in there, and
I also like the egg shaped lights, the plastic egg shaped lights that look almost like they've been painted with lead paint.
Yeah,
the colored ones.
Yeah.
Those ones look good outside as colored ones. If you try to put the string lights, the tiny little string lights outside with color, those don't look good to me for some reason.
The thing with the white lights, too, is that so many people have their lights up year-round or has some variation of Christmas lights up year-round now. that it's almost like it's tough to figure out the beginning and end point with the holiday season.
Yeah, you kind of have to decorate them a certain point. So that's the other thing, too.
As soon as you get to college, you're like, all right, this person's all in on the holidays.
So family moved in across the street, young family our age. They have a kid who actually coincidentally goes to the same daycare as our kid. And my wife is talking with the woman across the street. And she was like, she was asking my wife, so I was like, do you guys decorate for the holidays? And my wife's like, yeah, Mike does, you know, puts out so much stuff, blah, blah, blah. So now I'm finding that this year, when you have a almost 2-year-old running around, it's very hard to find time to go out and do the lights.
Yeah.
So I've been doing it piecemeal, like after work or whatever. So I put up just one thing of lit garland on the doorway, the stoop/doorway. And I guess the girl across the street texted my wife. It was like, hey, the lights look great. And she's like, no, there's so much more. He just hasn't gotten to it. Yeah, so hopefully I'm trying to get it. I'll get it done by Christmas. Maybe that's something I should do on Sunday instead of watching football, is that instead of just, you know, commiserating over my own picks, I can just start putting up Christmas lights. So it's a work in progress. We went to a lighting ceremony last week in Concord. My son does not wear gloves.
Okay.
Lost his goddamn mind after 10 minutes of being outside because he wouldn't put his gloves on. Hands got cold. So we were just carrying a screaming child through the streets of Concord trying to get back to our car.
What's the appropriate amount of time to get there before a tree lighting? What's
Ricky,
the window there?
Ricky, I'm not kidding you
because I'm not a tree lighting guy.
30 seconds before they lit the tree.
Like, oh, hey.
We're running
down.
We're not running down the street, but we're pushing it. We're pushing the stroller pretty quickly. And you can hear, like, you get within earshot and they've got the loudspeaker. There were a ton of people. Concord does it very nicely.
Yeah.
And she's like, all right, we're going to get to Santa in a few minutes. And so, like, we're running down the street through the center of Concord. And then finally get there as we take our spot. Santa takes over. He's like, Santa drops an elf line on everybody, so we sing a verse of Jingle Bells.
Oh, hell yeah.
To get our Christmas cheer up. And that's a 10-second. It was literally like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
So that's the answer. It's a minute and a half.
Because but I always wonder when does the gathering start?
So they had
the first person there. That's
was a little upset, and in hindsight, we probably wouldn't have even made it to the lighting because my psychopath son would have lost his mind. But they had a parade through town with Santa on the Christmas or on the fire truck, and he shows up and they light it. And so
nice.
Concord, full of rich people, white lights on a big tree in the town square. Don't really like that. It doesn't look on a tree that size.
You gotta go.
It just kind of looks unimpressive.
That is, it's just like that's just a tree.
Kinda, right.
You know,
with some
lights. That doesn't feel festive.
Correct. So I tell you what, as I am 35 years old, we did this solely for my son. I was excited to get there in time for it to get lit. And the lights come on and I realized it was white lights instead of colored. And I'm not kidding. There was a half second, split second where I was like, ah, oh, damn,
like
man.
Grown.
Yeah. Like
just a total wet fart.
Yeah. So that was my weekend. So
in my city, they do they used to have, Santa would skydive.
I don't live in Concord, by the way. I just want to get that out there. We don't have that kind of money. So skydiving, Santa.
So would usually skydive down in like this open field. Oh, that was the intention. To land in this open field. So for, you know, whatever, they would do that annually. And then I feel like there was a stretch there for a few years where things were just going awry. One year
Sick.
Landed in the marsh. Like, we jumped. I think there were elves that also jumped out one year, and like they all just kind of landed
intense.
In different areas.
Yeah.
Santa broke his leg.
I remember hearing about that actually.
So
yeah.
Now I believe that they, one of my friends took his son last week. Basically, he said that they just come, they fly Santa in to the open field in a helicopter and like drop him off. So they played a lot much safer. There's no jumping out with a parachute involved.
That makes sense. I mean, you get a gust of wind, you're off course.
Yeah.
I tell you what, too. You're playing it fast and loose when you start, like, rappelling Santa in, where if anything goes wrong,
yeah,
you are scarring the entire city's youth.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, I understand it.
Santa broke
his the move.
I remember that. It was so good.
But I do need a little more information though about as far like how long is that helicopter ride? Like, where are they picking him up? You know,
they could pick them up literally anywhere, right?
I mean, yeah, but I'm saying, like, is it like 100 yards away that they're taking off, or is Santa getting a nice little like 5 mile trek out of this? Maybe they're just picking them up right in the North Pole. Who the hell knows, Mike?
That's Boston Globe 2016 headline: Santa Claus breaks leg while parachuting into Quincy.
Yeah.
Definitely shook the people and the kids up, he said. You could tell.
Yeah, that's...
That was from the...
City Steel, still reeling, Mike. It's
a quote
reeling.
From the deputy fire chief.
The changes needed to be made.
The National Weather Service said winds could reach up to 40 miles per hour. No, that's... Come on. Somebody needs to be responsible there.
The pandemic is an opportunity to reassess how they approach Christmas moving forward.
This is so good. Penultimate line of the story. Santa was taken to Boston Medical Center, said Police Sergeant Gerald Connolly. Quote, there was a backup Santa for the kids, so they weren't traumatized.
You gotta have the backup. You gotta have a plan B.
So
there's always a plan B.
The forethought to maybe parachute in 40 mile per hour winds, not great. But to be thinking ahead to have a backup Santa just in case the guy
breaks
his leg.
So they knew that was on the table.
Yeah,
there was a distinct possibility that, like, they... I wonder if that was a last-minute effort, too. They woke up that morning, they checked out the Doppler.
They're like, we need to have a backup just in case.
They felt a few gusts, and they were like, they called somebody's cousin.
Hey, Tommy, you can...
Yeah, hey Mark, your cousin does that Santa thing, right? All right, well, we might need him today.
Hey, your cousin's fat, right? Yeah. what's your three-unit play this week, Ricky?
Oh, we're getting right into it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, nothing you wanted to get off your chest from last week?
No, I just said everything went wrong for me. And it was kind of the inverse of what it was last week, where I did a little bit better. You had a couple of rough beats, where it's like, I look at, and you got this one right, and I guess it wouldn't have made a difference. You had the total of the Houston-Cleveland game. I took the points in that one.
Yeah.
And you actually laid the points for our picks on bets. Cleveland didn't score an offensive touchdown. And it was just like one of those weeks where it's like they returned a punt and they picked up a fumble on the 5-yard line.
I think that was my two-unit play last week, the under in that game.
It was the under, yeah.
And the more the week went on, I was like, I should have made this my three-unit. Because that total was like 47 or 48, or it was in that ballpark, which is, I mean, that's high. With that Houston offense the way it is, and a quarterback who hasn't played in 2 years. Like, that is...
Yeah. And neither looked great. I mean, it's just... So, there's that. Still feel good about the Jets pick.
Anything from, like, a bigger picture, like, on field?
Well, I'm trying to, like, that's... So, like, no, but related to that, like, that Jets game and just everything that went with it, they lost to the Vikings, obviously. I'm kind of fascinated by the fact that the Vikings opened as short favorites this week and are now, like, getting a field goal at Detroit.
That is a huge swing in that.
So... I mean, obviously the market feels one way, but I don't totally disagree. I don't think I'm at the point where I think they should be, you know, giving points to Detroit no matter where they're playing.
That's a stay away game for me.
Me too, but like,
but I
still don't
circle.
Believe in Minnesota.
No, before, like, that was...
It's gotten too crazy, you can't
week,
touch it now.
It was,
almost.
I saw that as a potential spot. Like, I might like Detroit in that game, but now with the amount of line movement that we've seen, I'm staying away from that altogether.
So generally speaking, other than that, I mean, I don't know. Were there a ton of developments last week? I guess, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo's hurt.
Garoppolo injury. Are you in on the Bengals?
I guess I have to be. They've been a big time blind spot for me this year where I just kind of have not believed in them, just haven't really paid attention to them. And that's looking dumber and dumber by the week. I still don't totally see it. Burrow is awesome.
They're maybe just like...
Burrow's like early career Brady.
They're a very dangerous, like, fringy team. Better than fringy, but like...
Went to the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if you look at what are they, probably fourth in the conference now, if you were to pull up, like, the futures odds, like... I think they're, like, you got your Buffalo, you got your Kansas City, and then there's like after that, there's sort of that next collection of teams.
Well,
I'd
think
they're probably the most dangerous of that second team.
I think it's interesting too that they completely own Kansas City.
I mean, they have what you could argue a top five offense, top 10 defense, maybe.
Yeah,
well rounded. I think you're seeing it too. Like, the thing with them, they address the offensive line over the offseason. Like, so that's going to take a little bit to gel. Not like they're peaking at the right time.
They are mostly 12-1 across the board to win the Super Bowl. Okay. And they are 6-7-1 to win the conference. So
got the quarterback. So that's
the time to jump on them would have been like 2 weeks ago, probably. Yeah. But yeah, I don't. I guess I just look at them, and I'm not impressed by the coach. And like Chase is elite, and I like Burrow a lot. But after that, I just don't. Maybe this is a fault of my own. Don't know a lot about the guys that they have to be overly impressed.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just I haven't paid close enough attention to them because, like, I don't want to watch them play, like, Pittsburgh and, you know, Cleveland.
It is interesting, though, like, a team like that where, I mean, we sat here last week and talked about how Baltimore was that team that we just kept waiting to take off.
Oh.
And it's almost like Cincinnati is that team.
I know,
So that's, I guess, Baltimore to become that team. And
that might be part of my problem is I've just been focused on Baltimore too much.
Yeah, and maybe in reality it's just Cincinnati's that team.
Continues this week too. All right. Yeah, we'll work into some other stuff, but what's your three-unit play?
So three-unit play, I'm gonna take the over in the Dolphins-Chargers game. Fairly high total, 51.5 as of this recording. That's sort of one of my takeaways, I guess, from this past weekend as well, is that we kind of know what Miami is at this point, right? Like, they're gonna feast on some bad defenses.
That was one that we just crushed last week.
Yeah, we were all over that. But when they finally, you know, level up in competition, face more resistance, their offense is gonna not be, you know, up to that elite level. And I mentioned this in our picks column last week, but that 5-game winning streak they're on, and you mentioned this as well, just like the quality of the defenses that they faced. I mean, Pittsburgh, who much better now that really ever since they got TJ Watt back, which speaks to his value, but Detroit, Chicago, Cleveland, Houston. So in terms of EPA per play, that's 21st, 31st, 32nd, 28th, 19th. Then all of a sudden you run into San Francisco, who is second.
Yeah.
And you saw the effects of that this past week. Fortunately for the Dolphins, they come into this week, they have a little bit of a soft landing spot here against the Chargers. Chargers 27th in EPA per play, struggles against both the run and the pass. One thing that I probably going to be a huge issue for them as well is that, I mean, the Dolphins, their offense, they basically live in the middle of the field. You know, those intermediate routes, get those chunk plays with yards after the catch. Chargers 25th at defending passes in the middle of the field, according to Football Outsiders DVOA. So I lean towards laying the points. I think it's at 3.5 right now, Miami on the road. But for the purposes of this, I'm just going to take the over because I think the Chargers are going to be able to move the ball as well. Miami's defense, 25th in dropback success rate, 22nd in DVOA versus running back. So you might get some offense from the Chargers that way. I know that they lean a lot on their running backs out of the backfield, obviously Eckler. I just think this is a game where you're probably going to get a team, at least one team in the 30s, maybe like a 30 to 24 type of game. Chargers always seem to find themselves in those spots. Dolphins as well, really dating back to before the San Francisco game. So this just feels like a shootout. I lean towards laying the 3.5, but for this, like I said, I'll go over 51.5.
Chargers, another blind spot team for myself. I'm just looking at Football Outsiders now. If I just go across the board on their main team efficiency page, 26th in DVOA, 27th in weighted DVOA, or 28th in weighted DVOA, 27th in Dave, whatever that is. Offense is 25th, defense is 23rd, special teams 12th.
They're bad across the
estimated
board.
Wins 27th. Like they just they're like
they don't feel that bad.
They're like the opposite of the Bengals for me, where it's like I know what they are, like I know more about them, and I so I just probably am putting way too much stock in a team that just isn't good. That I feel like a complete doofus for like just the squarest, dumbest pick maybe this entire season of on this entire show. Was taking them last week. I just hate myself for that pick.
But it's the thing that's so dangerous with them, though, is because they have the quarterback, there's going to be those games where
it looks good. They roll.
Yeah, like
they,
which
like,
is part
it feels
of why
like a
I'm,
ceiling, but it I'm, might just be a blip.
Yeah, like I guess that's why I'm more comfortable taking the over than touching
the
number in this game because, like,
so what if they go nuts?
Miami might come out and lead by 17 in the second half, but then, you know, this past week was a good example. Like, Herbert, like, his numbers were kind of middle of the road until the end of the game, and you look up and he's got 300-something yards, yep, whatever. So, like, they're a team that constantly, because of their big play capability, is just a few offensive plays away from getting back into it, at least relative to the number.
Yeah.
You never really feel good going against them. But yeah, like, for all the reasons you mentioned, like, for the most part, they've been bad. They've just been a pretty bad team. Not a lot. Like, there's the playmakers there. They have a sexy roster.
Yeah, that's.
But
I am,
collectively, it's not really that good.
What do you think of the quarterback long term?
It just feels like.
I
don't know if they're.
This has
get
to be kind of on him somehow, right? Or you give him a complete pass.
No, I'm not giving him a complete pass because, like, I mean, you have weapons.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
the line's kind of iffy. It feels
like
the
line is the problem. Like,
the injuries are a mess every week. It's been like that since he was drafted too. Which is, I don't know whose fault that is, but
yeah.
I just look at, like, you throw all that out. Like, you got to go win that playoff game or that week 18 game last week. It just feels like every time they've had a big game, it's just not enough, which is an unfair standard to hold them to. But if this guy is as good as, you know, the pedigree says and the numbers say, I don't know. Jury's out. I'm not completely sold on him. He's a great player, but I just don't know if he's.
You also want to see that, like, and maybe this is a total misread on my part, but does it feel like they rally around him quite as much as you see with, like, Joe Burrow in Cincinnati or Josh Allen?
It does
in
feel like a slight disconnect.
Like, and I'm not saying that, like, Justin Herbert doesn't have control of the room.
That could be coaching,
like,
too,
that.
Though. That could, maybe the coach, we just don't, you know, it's easier.
They just don't have
the whole
that,
system, is
it? There's an it.
Yeah.
Missing.
That's what I'm saying,
with that,
right.
With that team. And how much of that is on him,
like
I don't know. But, like, this was supposed to be the year where they sort of took that next step.
I have to be forgetting something, but, like, it does feel like his one hallmark moment is covering a spread with broken ribs. Not winning the game, like, covering the spread in Kansas City this year.
Yeah, and you would think that was an opportunity to sort of take off from there. And, like,
he could still be playing hurt, too,
defense. Yeah. So. But the rest of that roster, yeah, that is the thing, too, is you're overcompensating for a lot with – given their line play, basically.
Yeah. My three in a play. I'm on the wrong side of the line move already, but I'll lay it or I'll take it anyway. I got the Jets getting 9 points at Buffalo. Jets won this game in New York a couple weeks ago, or actually this was early November, about a month ago now. I don't know. Like, I just think the Jets are going to be the kind of team that play close games against pretty much anyone they face, and I just. If you give them, 3 points for home field at the Ralph, are they really 6 points better than the Jets, the Bills? Yeah, I mean, probably, I guess, as I say it out loud. But I just think they're a pesky team. Last week, they just didn't do the job in the red zone. You know, like, if they punch one of those in, they win that game. And the conversation's completely different coming out of Minnesota. So I think that they're in a good spot here to kind of.
They had like 200 more yards of offense or something
like
that.
Yeah, I love the defense. I think, you know, this is a much different Buffalo team than they faced in week whatever that was. I think 9. Buffalo had banged up. They're banged up on both sides of the ball, so, you know, they are getting healthier here. But, you know, you look at the Jets since, like, I think week 3. Yeah, since week 3, they haven't lost a game by more than a touchdown. Early on in the season, too, that was like the, you know, Joe Flacco into Zach Wilson's first foray. The fact that they haven't gotten blown out in pretty much any game since then with Zach Wilson playing like a complete moron tells me that they are well coached. They're physical. They are strong defensively. I just like it, too. Like, again, to that point, like, they didn't cover last week. I can't undo that. No matter what I say, no matter how I bend that fact that they didn't cover, but, like, let's say they did, you know, it was close enough, right?
You don't have to sell me on hypotheticals.
So, like, I don't know, you just look at, like, a few weeks ago when Minnesota was in Buffalo is a 6.5 point favorite. Now they're, you know, 9, 9.5. So like it all equals out. The math equals out. Like the Jets were 3-point underdogs last week in Minnesota. But like we're looking at the Vikings are now underdogs at Detroit. I just contend that like the Vikings are like the smoking gun here. And I just think the Jets, despite the fact that they didn't win or cover last week, are pretty comparable to a Minnesota team that went into Buffalo and beat the Bills. That was with the early part of the Josh Allen injury. I don't know. Like,
you want to talk about a team that
feisty, pesky bunch.
Everyone's struggling to get a read on. It's Minnesota.
I think they stink. Whatever. And also Buffalo 2-3 against the spread as favorites of 9 points or more this season on a 3-game losing streak against the spread in that regard. So they just have not been a very sure thing as laying a bunch of points.
I think we could say fairly definitively at this point that the Patriots are the worst team in that division.
Yeah, it might even be the Patriots or the Dolphins too. Like, it's weird. Actually, I don't know, because
like for the Dolphins, all the like reasons the you mentioned, like the Jets feel like, I mean, they could take over a game.
They feel like
really along the defensive line. Like they can just completely disrupt your offense.
They also just feel like they're building something. They have like more of an identity.
There's young players, young coach, both like
the quarterback was just
trending
getting
in the
way.
Right direction. Right. Yeah, the quarterback was getting in the way. Miami, if nothing else, has an offense unlike any
talent.
In the NFL.
They have more talent.
And they have the talent. Also with the young coach.
Arguably a better quarterback.
On an upward trajectory. Buffalo's Buffalo.
Yep. Yeah,
we know
fair.
What their ceiling is. The Patriots are just stuck there.
Yeah.
There is just nothing to feel real good
and
about.
And now it sounds like they have a walking dead offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And so it's just a lame duck.
Even when the positives surrounding them this year, it's like, well, how sustainable is that year over year? Like, their defense is obviously the strong point, but like, how much of that is like, it's not like I don't look and I'm like, oh, they got a lot of cornerstones on their defense. Yeah. Like, that's going to be good for several years. Like, you have Matthew Judon having a hell of a year, you're getting some aging players on that side of the ball. It's just like,
even like, I mean, they get dunked on when they play good teams, too. Yeah. Like, it is what it is. What's your two-unit play, Ricky?
Two-unit play. I'm going to take the 49ers at home, laying 3.5 to the Buccaneers.
Wow.
Obviously, serious question marks here about the quarterback position out in the Bay Area after the aforementioned Garoppolo injury. But I'm not going to overreact to that. And I'm not going to overreact to the Bucs win on Monday night when their offense once again looked atrocious for the majority of that game. We talked about Miami running into that San Francisco defense. Now you got the Tampa Bay offense broken, going on the road. It just, I don't know where the points are going to come from their, from their side of the fence. The over-under in this is, I think, at 37, which is extremely low. I thought about going under again. I've just been kind of peppering the Bucks unders this year. Might be another spot to do it. But I think for me, even with Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, I think they'll do enough. I think the way that offense in San Francisco is built, that, is such that he's not going to have to do a whole lot. Like, I think if there's any place in the NFL where you can get by with a third-string quarterback winning games, at this short of a number, that's the team. So, yeah, I think, I'm not going to... This is just me going against the inclination to overreact to what we've seen from these two teams this past week.
It's a fair... Yeah, I almost took, like, the
nothing about Tampa Bay inspires me, aside from the quarterback, obviously. But, I mean, they just... They're lifeless on offense.
It's almost surprising how unsurprising it's become, where it's just like every week, it's the same thing. They don't get it going. I'm pulling up their schedule because I'm curious as to when the last time they scored a bunch of points was. It's been a while. So I'm going to call an audible on the fly here. I'm changing my 2-1 unit play. For my 2-unit play, I'm taking the under in the 49ers Bucks game.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm taking under 37. Pull it up here. Last week or Monday night, 33 points, 40 points in Cleveland, a game that went to overtime, 37 against a robust Seattle offense, 29 in the Rams game, 49 in the Ravens, 24 Carolina, 38 Pittsburgh, 36 Atlanta, and then 72 week four against the Chiefs. So, like, they've been in that neighborhood. This is the neighborhood in which they live. Like, yeah. That is for totals. That's both teams combined that I just mentioned. Like, the outlier in that stretch is a 27-22 game. And it's hard to see which offense gets going here. Because you have the San Francisco defense that has been almost under the radar with how good it's been. I know they're, like, the first in the NFL in just about everything. But, like, they're just every week. It's just a quiet workman-like. You know, it's not like they were, was it Dallas this year or last year getting a ton of credit because they would just get a bunch of takeaways, score on defense, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah. The 49ers don't really do that. But, yeah, it's, you know, they don't give up points either. They didn't give up a, like, second half point for like a month.
So 10 of Tampa's 12 games have gone under.
Which is like, I know that's a, you know, I don't really pay close attention to trends, but like, all that tells me is they don't score high. They haven't had right. high scoring games.
But not only are they going under, but they're going under by a wide margin, an average of 7.9 points per
sure.
game. And
I just
like
don't...
the totals that are being set for their games. Like, it's not like they've had some, you know, that they're
high
going
ones.
Under like 50.
Yeah,
through consistently. Like, over the last, we've had four. All right, four straight unders for the Bucks. And the total was set at 43, 45, 42 and a half, 40 and a half. And then you just ran down some of like the point totals that they've had. Like, it is no wonder that they're dropping. Now we're into the 30s
right.
because it's been a struggle to get there.
It's just their offense looks so laborious. It just looks like such a chore to move the ball and score points. And like, you know, they score late on Monday. That gets them to what, 17? Like, it's not even,
yeah,
you know, it's not even like it's pushing them through some, I mean, it's like one or two scores every game. So you've got that. That's not great going up against San Francisco on a short week with travel. And on the other side, it's Mr. Irrelevant making his first career start with tape on him now. Like, you can almost excuse it last week for Miami, and maybe there's enough bells and whistles there for San Francisco. So, like, I don't trust either side, but it does just feel like another rock fight for the Bucks.
Yeah. So, I mentioned the
I'd probably grab the points just because I can't stomach the fact that laying points with a Mr. Irrelevant against Tom Brady, but...
Well, you got to get uncomfortable sometimes.
That is true. Like, that is... Yeah, that's not a... And that's a good point.
In my one unit play, it makes me very uncomfortable as well. Because I, you know, we just hopped on... Tampa Bay is under. So the only team that is more goes under more frequently than Tampa Bay is the Denver Broncos.
Oh boy.
11 of their 12 games have gone under. They're going under by an average of 11 points too. You want to talk about laborious offenses. That's exactly what you're dealing with there. But on the other side of the coin, and I got to give them some credit for this, is that their defense hasn't mailed it
yeah.
in. Like, it would have been very easy for them to, on that side of the ball, just sort of roll over and die. Maybe it happens this week. But, you know, continue to have a top five defense, really, no matter how you slice it. First in defensive yards per drive, second in defensive points per drive, first in defensive drive success rate, which basically is the percentage of downs, percentage of series that result in a first down or a touchdown. So all is this to say, I'm going to take the points with Denver this week, getting 9 at home against Kansas City. Maybe this is a bounce-back spot for the Chiefs, and that offense finally, like I said, takes advantage of a Broncos defense that rolls over and dies. But I don't see that happening. I mean, we know that Denver's a tough place to play. So I just think that they're going to be able to do enough to slow down that offense. Do I think Denver's offense is suddenly going to turn around? No. But this strikes me as a game that, you know, if Denver can get to, like, I don't know, 10 points, I think they might be able to keep it within the number here. So This is, like I said, it makes me uncomfortable, but all factors considered, just kind of plug your nose, take the points, and hope for the best.
I considered it too, actually.
The thing is too, and I might even like,
it's a lot of points for a relatively low total.
I might wait too on this because I can't imagine that you're going to see much support for the Broncos in this game or really any other game moving forward. Whereas the Chiefs are always going to have that public support. So yeah, like this might get up to 10 or over by the time kickoff rolls around.
I am pulling it up right now to see if it looks like there's going to be any sort of movement on it. Let's see. Chiefs, Kansas City, Denver. My computer's being a B-word. It's great radio or podcasting. They say there. Oh, yeah, that's right. They flex this one. Yeah, it looks like, if anything, it's pretty strong at 9, but, you know, as it gets closer, people start chasing. You know, if you lose in the 1 o'clock games on Sunday and you're chasing those losses, are you really going to be like, let me grab some points with Denver here?
Yeah. So, if anything, I would expect the opposite approach.
Yes, I agree. So, all right, for my one-unit play, I'm going to take – I can't quit him. Taking Baltimore.
They're, I actually like this pick.
They're catching 3 points.
You were leaning this way.
At Pittsburgh. I think it's at Pittsburgh, right? That feels like something I should know. This is – so I looked – yeah, it's at Pittsburgh. I went and looked on the look-ahead lines from early last week for this week. Baltimore was a 4.5-point favorite to start that going into last week for this game. And then now they're 3-point underdogs. So a 7.5-point swing in good times feels – fairly appropriate, if not still kind of slightly high for Lamar Jackson. But, like, it has not been super Lamar Jackson this year. That's not to say losing him won't hurt. I think it does, especially if he's gone for an extended period of time. But I think in a 1 week sample size against a team that they're familiar with, I think Justin Huntley is, you know, or excuse me, Tyler Huntley is an adequate backup. I think I might be saying that as a scarred Packers fan who almost saw him beat the Packers last year, just running wild. But, you know, he started 4 games last year. They went 1-3 in those games. Not great. Those 3 losses, they lost by a combined 7 points. They were in every game that he started last year without Lamar. So there's institutional knowledge. I think it's a good system. It's, you know, there are a few teams probably around the league that you would feel as good about a backup going in, right? Like, he's diet Lamar. He's familiar with the system. It's a good system, good head coach. It's all sound. It's all structurally sound. So I think it's not the end of the world that he's in there, especially with how much the spread swung. I'm also not totally ready to trust the Pittsburgh offense, which is showing signs of life. I thought they looked like they are going in the right direction. They looked good in Atlanta. I think, like, if you give it, like, if their runway was a little bit longer, if it was like a 22-game season, maybe they get in the playoffs because the defense is good. They didn't have TJ Watt for a good chunk of the season. Now it feels like Kenny Pickett's finally putting it together. But I think this is a tough spot for them. I guess the Baltimore defense I talked about last week, they are like a top half of the league defense. They've allowed 13 points or less in 3 of their last 4 games. Most of those are against middling offenses, but this is probably falls under that category. So I think also too, you want to give like the great equalizer, trust Justin Tucker. Like, if it comes down to that, that keeps them, he's probably not going to miss and something to tie it up or keep it close. So I think they get, you know, within the number here, I think maybe probably even win this game. But yeah, so I like Baltimore here. Probably would like the under 40, or actually it's open at 41. It's down to 37. I probably don't like it as much there. I think weather is going to be a bit of an issue as well too this week, which probably favors Baltimore because they are, I mean, it's going to be tough for them to run against Pittsburgh, but maybe just Huntley goes nuts and that's their offense. And a 1 week sample size, I don't mind it.
Yeah. I think there's something to be said for like quarterback redundancy, if you want to put it that way, or where
it's
like,
smart.
Where you have
in terms of team building,
like nobody's going to sit here and say that Huntley is Lamar Jackson or even to go back to my 49ers pick that like Brock Purdy is Jimmy Garoppolo. But like, I think you could accomplish a lot
sad
of the same
state
things.
Of affairs.
offensively that you can with the with the previous quarterback. And like this isn't a situation where you're going from Patrick Mahomes to Chad Henne or something like that. Like, sure, there's a definite talent disparity between Lamar Jackson and Tyler Huntley, but like your offense can most certainly function, and we've seen it too. It's not like you're not just banking on that based on the skill set. Like you mentioned, there were four games last year where he looked good. There were times where he looked really good.
Yeah.
So
sometimes he looked but again, in 1 week for a good team, good system, good coach,
and it's just I think there's just value there.
7.5 point swing.
Yeah. Then and there's sure, like in theory, Lamar Jackson might be 7.5 points better than Tyler Huntley, but when you factor in just the offense as a whole and the team as a whole for like given their defensive strengths as well, like that's I don't see that much of a gap there.
I am looking this up, backup QB rankings site Nesson.com. Sam Panayotovich did something earlier this season looking at that where he talked to a veteran,
which is interesting. I remember who the number one quarterback was in that as far as the
which
the
is ironic in hindsight
from the starter to the backup, you know, how much they're worth to the point spread, and the most valuable quarterback was none other than who
that would be Russell Wilson.
Russell
I can't find it, but I can't imagine it's that big of a drop off.
I it was something like Russell Wilson was worth 8 points more than Brett Rippon or something.
Yeah.
Which 8 points? Denver is lucky if they put up 8 points now.
That's a good.
I sit here as somebody who just took the Broncos as my 1 year to play.
Well,
but
you got to be uncomfortable.
But you know, they coming off a week in which they scored 9, so. Oh, the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, I can't find it. Whatever. Yep. Do you have anything else?
The overarching point being that Tyler Huntley is a good backup quarterback.
Got it. Found it. Jesus. what did you say? It was 8.5 for Russ Wilson?
I thought it was something like that. 8.5. Could be making up that number, but
yeah, it was 8.5. Lamar Jackson to Tyler Huntley, 5.5. So
okay,
I'm getting 2 points of value here.
Huh. Sure.
Not a whole lot of other. I mean, this is such a good list. Matt Wolford to John, Matt Stafford to John Wolford, 6 points. We've seen how that's kind of played out. Herbert to Chase Daniel, 5 points. That could see lowest ranking on this list. Okay.
All right.
This was fun.
Yeah.
Be careful parachuting this week. Enjoy your vacation.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to figure something out.
I was thinking, I used to do this show solo. Maybe I'll just go back to doing that.
You should. Give it a whirl.
And let me tell you.
I'll be on a little Mountain West sports jamboree this weekend. I'll be darting all over the place.
Must be nice. Oh, that's too bad you missed the holiday Christmas party. Or the holiday Christmas party. Well, company Christmas party. So that would have been a nice thing for us to just dump on our coworkers again next week.
You might be ostracized at the party for your...
That's a fair point.
Your take on small talk. Yeah. Like, now everybody's going to have it because everybody here listens to the spread, obviously.
Everybody does, yeah.
It's going to be in the back of every single person's mind when they're engaging
like this,
in
he doesn't give
discourse with you.
Two shits what I'm saying right now.
This guy is just such a prick.
Well, I just try to do Monday,
that's
through,
why I'm not going.
Monday through Friday when I'm seeing
exactly.
A book
of vacation.
You're not
to
actually,
get out of it.
This guy, yeah, well, Ricky hates you guys so much. He's just like a random vacation in the middle of nowhere.
You can dump all over me.
No, I just, when I'm sitting down at my desk, I do good work that helps people out, and I hope that gets me far enough so it's not awkward and I can talk behind their backs. All right, Ricky, it's been fun. We'll see you again whenever. Bye.